and welcome to Bad End Podcast. This is episode number 93, approaching that number 100 soon. We're going to have a big, big show for that. We got some stuff in the works, but we have a big show today. I am Josh Calixto, as always, joined by Kyle Cookstell, and we have a very special guest today. That guest is Gareth Damian Martin. Gareth is a game developer. You might know them from In Other Waters, a fantastic, awesome, incredible game. Also a good friend of ours from back in the day. We wrote together at the publication Killscreen, RIP, sort of. Fantastic writer, fantastic creative mind who is always, you know, producing something that you can be assured will be incredible. And the reason why we are joined by Gareth, we will actually announce in just a second. But Gareth, why don't you introduce yourself, talk to us a bit about what you have going on right now, as well as some stuff that you've done in the past.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I don't know how to follow that amazing intro, though. as an incredible creative mind, speaking from that position, I it's much appreciated. I'm a game developer who, like you said, I made In Other Waters, but also a games journalist who's written for kind of all of the publications, I guess, or most of them over the years. It's been a while. Been around a while, and I also edit Heterotopias and creator of Heterotopias. So a whole range of things, and I have a degree in puppetry. So you didn't mention that, but I thought it might be useful to know.
I don't think I was aware of this. So apologies for that, but it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise to me.
For all the listeners, we've been teasing a little bit about sort of changes that are happening at Superculture, which is the kind of parent network that we collectively run that houses Bad End, which is this podcast, obviously, as well as Bullet Points, Savoir Faire, which was a Disco Elysium podcast. And then recently we announced a collaboration with Funland to join the network. And we had a little bit more stuff coming. And so if you haven't already guessed, because Gareth is on this podcast now, we're very excited. It's to more formally announce that Heterotopias will be coming under the Superculture Network umbrella. Yay! So I think that it's in some ways it made a lot of sense based off what we had sort of founded Superculture off of, which is this idea of trying to collect have a place where people who are interested in games in the way that we're interested in games can kind of come and have multiple places to read that sort of stuff. Bad End is a little bit of a, you know, catch-all games podcast situation. Bullet Points has always provided a nice critical take on games sort of more generally, but also their structure, this zine format works to be able to do deep dives on specific games. And I think them also, especially looking at often bigger AAA stuff almost more frequently than they look at smaller stuff, is kind of continuing a little bit of that Killscreen spirit of trying to like mine these maybe artistically bankrupt pieces of art for things that are surprising that the developers didn't even intend. And then obviously Funland is, we don't want to say too much about that because it's not out yet, but it's just some amazing editorial work. And then Heterotopias is, you know, we've known Gareth since Killscreen days. And Josh said we used to write with Gareth at Killscreen. But I think what's more apt to say is that Gareth used to write at Killscreen and everyone else just watched in awe. And so ever since leaving, ever since everyone sort of left Killscreen, all of us have been fans of Heterotopias. I think we've talked about it on the past before. But specifically the angle in which Heterotopias approaches talking about games generally is something that we've always enjoyed and loved. And we think that we want to amplify that voice. Superculture is not some giant multi-network, you know, massive corporate fiscal entity. Right now it's just a way for people to kind of, you know, have a share, be like, if you're interested in one of these things, you'll probably like other ones. So if nothing else, hoping to just like boost the appeal of Heterotopias and have everyone just work together to get everybody to read that stuff, because just everything that's been written in the publication is so amazing. And so the fact that you're joining the Superculture Family is very exciting because it seems like a natural fit for what we've been doing and what you've already been doing longer than Bad End's been around. I think you started Heterotopias 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even.
Totally. I think there's like a really strong shared philosophy, yeah, across like bullet points. And obviously we have came from the same stable and like Bad End and Heterotopias. But Heterotopias actually, I don't know if you guys remember, but it was originally the name of a column that I had at Killscreen. And then right. The magazine itself came out of me being so sick of not having, I'm pretty sure it was a response, if I remember rightly, to Killscreen dying, was me being like, I'm sick of having to ask permission to make write the things I want to write. And so I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to email a few people and tell them I'll give them some money to write some pieces. So it was Darren Anderson, who I think had already done some stuff for Killscreen, and Chris Priestman, who's the associate editor right. at Heterotopias. And I got them to write some pieces. And I did a piece on Kane and Lynch too that I wanted to write forever and put that out. And then it was so, it did so well that I was like, well, I'm just going to have to keep doing this because there's actually so many people who want to think about game spaces and game architecture and want to write about them. There's, you know, all of a sudden I had people pitching me and saying, I really want it. I really like this idea. And so this like one issue kind of experiment turned into something that's now run for 7 issues and is self-sustaining. And we've had loads of great coverage. And yeah, it's been amazing to run, and it's I'm really interested to kind of bring it to Superculture in terms of bringing it to the audience here and just seeing how people are going to respond. And the big thing that we're doing right now is having through this month or through March an open call for issue 8, and we're changing how we do things to try and increase the number of writers and not just pull from the same stable and actually get new fresh ideas into the zine. So the open call, we're announcing the theme of the issue, which is power. And I'll be asking people to pitch me for a month basically on power. And then I'll assemble that into the next issue along with Chris as well. And so, yeah, it's an opportunity also for people who maybe haven't heard of Heterotopias before to write for it, or people who've been wanting to pitch it but hadn't, you know, just had a kind of blank email to look at, now have at least some guidance. So, and I'm super excited about approaching power and spaces of power and how architecture and spaces in games relate to the kind of manifestation of power or the subversion of power. And yeah, like I've already got a few pieces that I want to write. I want to have a time to write. Like I could write a whole magazine myself on that, I think. So I'm going to only write one piece and leave some things for other people to write. But yeah, no, I'm really excited about that.
It's also fun to talk about Heterotopias and specifically the theme of power, because I've often found when I've read architecture theory that architecture theory is often much more compelling than what architects actually produce due to the constraints of the real world. So talking about architecture and video games is interesting because it doesn't necessarily have that constraint. Yet at the same time, so many structures in video games tend to remediate the same sort of constraints of reality. So some of the best Heterotopia stuff is, in my mind, is the things that sort of question that boundary about the virtual and the real. Because you look at, like, despite, you know, games being these insane creative spaces of, you know, theoretically infinite possibility, people still build houses in the same way. Like you even have things that are like physics systems often have to react physically and like in realistic ways, which means that if you like destroy a house wall that's got some crazy like particle physics system in the drywall, you expect to see 2x4s there that are placed appropriately to like standard or whatever. So yeah, just the Heterotopias is great because it explores I think it's basically what I'm trying to say is that it's easy sometimes to hear games and architecture and be like, I'm not interested in architecture, like whatever. But I think if you were to give Heterotopias more of a chance, so to speak, if finding that just talking about the notion of spaces in games themselves is what it is about. Architecture is a meaningful lens to look at spaces, obviously, but it's not like you're not like necessarily doing design critique from an architectural standpoint of a space. It's much more about what is this construct that you're playing in like mean, or what is it trying to say, and how does that affect X, Y, Z or whatever?
Yeah, 100%. I think like it's definitely not like, I have this book in my bookcase called Pevsner's, which is like an architecture book where it's just like medieval architecture, and it's just like little drawings of like, this is a gable and this is like a loophole and this is like this kind of column, like the classic diagram, right? Like Corinthian column and like different, like, and that's like, that's, I mean, we might do that, but we do that in like a way in which we explored like what a typology would mean. It's totally not about like being like, hey, look, Dark Souls, that's a Gothic cathedral. Gothic cathedrals are based on this, which means the Dark Souls is about, you know, it's like, no, like, not at all. Because really, you know, game spaces, even if they're landscapes, the central principle I work with writers on Heterotopias is the idea that games are built space, right? And so even if they're a landscape, they're still built space. And built space is what architecture is. So we work from this premise of saying like, okay, someone has built this space. And, you know, what is it representing? The idea of a heterotopia is like a theoretical concept from Foucault, but it's basically this, it's all about this one quote about heterotopias, which are spaces that represent, contest, and invert reality. So the idea is like, when every time I want to look at a game space, or I'm a writer is pitching something, I'm thinking about that idea, like, how does this space represent reality, but also how does it invert it or like adjust it? How does it counter to it? And how does it contest it? Maybe, you know, the like, what kind of reality is it representing? Like, you talked about destroying a wall or something, but the knowledge we have of destroying a wall comes from action movies more than it comes from like actually destroying a real wall, right? So right. The aesthetics of destruction in architecture are kind of like implicitly linked to a whole cultural chain of like how we understand those things. And that's like the really meaty stuff that I'm really interested in exploring. And so, like power is a kind of subject in relation to that I've been wanting to do an issue of Heterotopias on forever. And so it seemed like a really good opportunity to open the open calls with something that's just so kind of potent. And that also opens up, I think, to, you know, a larger group of writers, I think, because we don't want people who are just traditional kind of white male architect theory types coming and writing for Heterotopias. Like, we, you know, we really actively encourage people to pitch who like explicitly queer pieces, explicitly pieces about the relationship between power and being a person of color and how that reflects space. You know, that's the kind of things that I really want to see in Heterotopia. So it's an important prompt to try and get like some of that out of all those amazing writers that out there who I think there are, who are really so eager to write about. I'm always amazed how many people are eager to write about this thing that I just thought was like my own weird obsession, which is like focusing too much on game spaces.
It's the other funny part about that is that I remember there's sort of a trope a little bit in games writing of people writing about their like experience about how X game got them through Y negative circumstance, you know, whatever that may be. And that like everyone loves to write that piece because it feels very personal and meaningful, but like no one likes to read that because they're all effectively the same. But Heterotopia is sort of operating in a similar niche where people who are interested in this sort of thing may have like one good article in them about this thing, but all these things are so different that you can just have totally different people every single episode write their one article on the thought about like space and its relationship in a game. And because it's such like a nascent field that I feel like you are basically carving out as a actual critical pathway of understanding games, that every single article reads as like fresh, new. Like it's every single piece feels like it's expanding the discourse on this, like, I would still say like relatively nascent field of understanding. And I don't know. Do you feel like you're providing a different critical lens of thinking about games, albeit it's like working in like a cultural context of analyzing space generally, but I'm wondering if you've seen sort of precursors to this idea about how to look at games sort of crop up outside of maybe specific. I'm thinking of, there's this book called An Architectural Approach to Game Design, which is like the only other thing I can think of that's maybe adjacent, but yeah. Even that's more from a mechanics practitioner perspective and less of a critical lens.
Yeah, the vast majority of architecture stuff from architecture critics or architects about games tends to be very mechanical and very much about like how you build a level and like that. Because there's a huge number of architects working in games, right? And like The Witness had like three different architects working on it or something. And like that's not really where I'm coming from, because I'm kind of an outsider to architecture. And although I've ended up at, like, I've done some teaching at the Bartlett School of Architecture in London. I was teaching really about games there, and I was really coming to that as someone with a knowledge of games and kind of working with students in an MA program run by UMP, which is an architecture group, Luke Pearson architecture group. And like the work we were doing with students there, it's that the reading lists were tiny, right? Because there's just like, it was mostly articles written by games critics that would really dig into like this cultural stuff, right? Like I could set kill screen articles or whatever to these students, because the reading list of books on architecture and games design that are not just the mechanical realities of it is very small. But on the flip side, I don't think of like, it's important to say, like, I'm just, a lot of what I'm doing is just trying to create a space for a lot of work that it does already exist. And a lot of writers out there who are super eager to write this stuff. And like, I've never had a problem having pitches for this project. I've always had loads of pitches, and there's loads of people who write these things, but for different publications online, right? Who've made it their thing. I think like Ewan Wilson jumps to mind as someone who just consistently does this work for Eurogamer and other places. And so, yeah, totally. I think it's felt more like Heterotopias has been a lucky meeting point, I guess, that like when it started, there wasn't a lot going on around it. But now I feel like I see similar Heterotopias-like pieces turning up in a lot of publications, and often from writers who've previously written for Heterotopias. So that's the nicest thing for me, is to see that there's a kind of lasting impact in terms of encouraging that dialogue. But at the moment, I'm really eager to push Heterotopias into like new spaces as well. Like we do a lot of visual work, a lot of photo essay work. And one of the things we did was last issue, I did the first of so-called Heterotopias projects, which was like almost like an independent little book that came free with the zine that was photos by Aaron Rauch, who's of Japan, photography of Japan combined with images taken in the Yakuza games, exploring like space and urban development in Japan and kind of the urban fabric. And like that's a really super experimental piece. You know, it's like a photo, it's like an experimental photo monograph. So I'm also like, yeah, I'm eager to keep pushing and to provide spaces also for those kind of projects. But it's not really about me like being the person who is making this stuff happen. And it's more that I think the stuff is out there. It's just trying to provide a publication that can pay people a bit of money and can also like make them feel like there's an audience there that they can write these pieces and they won't just sit on their Medium blogs, you know. it's a hard world out there for a freelance writer.
Language on a Substack.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that has always kind of spoken to me about Heterotopias is just how, you know, I was, not gonna lie, a little bit intimidated at first by just like the prospect of, man, am I gonna be smart enough to read about architecture video games? But it's just so intuitive to the way that you think about video games, right? Like you're always in a space. There are always like these weird implications of these spaces that you're in. They're not necessarily bound by the same rules, by the spaces that we live in real life. And this is something that both of you have said already. But I think just the fact that there is so many implications of the spaces that we are in video games, and so much to be said about those. And it all qualifies as architecture, because video games, as Gareth was saying, are built space. Like from the ground up, no matter what that is, even if it's not like a building necessarily, it is all a building in the context of a video game. So, I would just encourage anyone listening to this, you know, you might know someone who has a lot to say about stuff like this, but you know, you can reach out to us. You can reach out to Gareth on Twitter. We'll be talking a bit more about like plugs and stuff later. But reach out and write for this publication, pitch and. Because there's so many things out there to be said about this stuff that you don't need a degree in architecture to have something to say about. So,
especially if the editor of the publication doesn't have a degree in architecture, then you definitely don't need a degree in architecture to write about games and architecture.
We have to talk about In Other Waters at least a bit, because this is something that it has like shown up in my everyday life a couple times, and I'm really like, oh, I know them. I know that person. Like, seriously, like someone, I was talking to someone and they were like, oh yeah, like have you heard of this game In Other Waters? Just popped up on like my Switch like feed, and I was like, yeah, I know that game. Like, so nuts. But why don't you tell us about the game, how it's been received, and just like what it's like for you now being a person who put out In Other Waters.
Yeah, so In Other Waters, if people listening haven't played it, is you might have heard of it, you might not have, but it's a game where you play as the AI inside the suit of a xenobiologist as they explore an alien planet and an alien ocean, and you basically kind of run the internal workings of their suit and talk to them through text, and it's a UI game. Even if you haven't heard of it, you might have seen this kind of blue and yellow like topographic maps, which have been spread around a lot by now. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm still in this weird zone where I feel like I can't, when I name search the game on Twitter and I see people doing exactly that, being like, oh, look at this game, another what is this? I'm always like so amazed that people, again, like, it really feels like Heterotopia is in a weird way, that like people are interested in like what feels like an obsession for me, because the game very much comes out of my obsession with marine biology and my interest in like maps as storytelling tools and in the possibility of text games that aren't like branching choose your own adventure, but instead like I think, you know, something I, yeah, like I love to steal ideas from AAA games. And sometimes I'd be like, describe like In Other Waters as like Destiny if you just had the map, because you know, you have like beautiful maps in Destiny. Like, why do you need anything else? Or like Mass Effect's galaxy map, if that was just an entire game rather than just the map of the game like that. Yeah. So like that's, but yeah, it's been crazy, especially thinking back to like Killscreen and like that journey from being a critic, from going from being a critic to being a game developer. Yeah. It's still wild to see people respond to the game. It's still wild to know that like now I am a game studio, right? Like I have working on a project at the moment that's going to get announced a little later in the year. And yeah, it's very cool to be doing it. It's weird because you kind of cross over that line as well. And so it's kind of hard to keep being a games critic in a way. You know, you kind of like, you're treated differently and you're expected to have different allegiances in a weird way, which can be strange to navigate. But yeah, I feel like I got very lucky. The critical response was amazing to the game. It's been pretty cool.
As a critic, it's got to be interesting to kind of sit there and see what people are taking away from this game, because I know that for me personally, having, you know, read your work and, you know, even talk to you on these online chats that we've got going on, I feel like I'm pretty familiar with like what you're interested in, what you were just mentioning now about, you know, architecture, maps, marine biology, stuff like that. And then to hear people talking about it through other lenses as well, which I'm like, I wonder if that's what Gareth was thinking when they were creating this game. You know what I'm saying? Like hearing people talk about just minimalism is like a thing that I hear said a lot when talking about Another Waters, like evoking so many like emotions and stuff using like very minimalistic tools. Does it feel weird to kind of have people talking about it from these different angles than you might have been thinking of it through? Or is that something that you feel like gives it more life? Like, what is your perspective on how people are weighing in on the game so far?
Yeah, I think because I'm a critic, and I think that's not just like a job, but like a particular mindset where I'm a very like connectively mind. Like if we started talking about the game now, I would end up talking about like 10 other different games that influence the game rather than actually talking about the game. And I think that's kind of like a critic mindset in a way, where you're just always like doing this kind of mental Jenga of like piling up, building your little, oh, that's not what Jenga is. That's mental Lego. Just playing Jenga in reverse there. But no, so I'm always super like eager to see this stuff from people and to see reviews, and like loads of stuff came out that I was not aware that I was putting into the game, which is funny because it's kind of the game is basically a solo developed game. I mean, I had a composer on the game and I had a programmer who's working on the technical side for a couple of months, but yeah, it's, you know, in terms of kind of authorship, it was all me. But because of that, you get so close to it that you don't see stuff. And so people talk about the game as being like super relaxing. I've heard other people talk about like the queer narratives in the game. Obviously, the game has like a queer main character, but like also about its relationship with bodies. And yeah, a lot of that stuff has led to me to kind of reflect on like what I was trying to do with the game, but also all the stuff that just kind of came naturally with, you know, with just sitting down to write something or sitting down to think up a character or that stuff you don't really intend. And yeah, I really feed off that, I think. I think I really love to see people like having a take on the game, as long as that take isn't what one podcast recently was like, it was a new father and they were like, I fell asleep so many times to this game. No. But like and they were kind of meaning it as a compliment, but I was like, I can't take this as a compliment. There's no way. They were like, this is the sleepiest game I've ever played. I was like, oh God. but as long as it's not that, then I'm good. Yeah, I enjoy people bringing stuff to it and kind of picking up on stuff. I think like the minimalism and stuff is also fun, because I guess that like that's really just my background, like doing work as a graphic designer, because as everyone knows, doesn't actually pay you to be a games critic usually. So all the time I was writing for Killscreen, I was like actually working as a graphic designer. So like that, you know, there's a lot of stuff there that's just stuff that's part of me in a weird way, that like part of my history or whatever, and it all just gets lumped together when you make the game. And I definitely feel way more aware of that now, making my second game, that like in a way that, yeah, it'll be interesting. It feels like sometimes feels like working out things in public in a weird way, which when this stuff kind of catches up with you. But yeah, it's definitely nice to have an active community of people, and to have critics write about it and praise it is one of my favorite things, really.
One thing that I like about Another Waters is from like knowing approximately when you started on it and when you basically got it out, like the development cycle was probably like 2 years, 3 years maybe?
Yeah, like 2 years, probably proper development, three years like messing around.
Like just based on like what I know your interests to be around that time and what they still are now, I think that the context of In Other Waters maps to a vision of yourself and what you're interested in. Because I think about this a lot on Cantata, where the seed of Cantata started like 7 years ago, and I've been working on it for 4-ish years, probably, and then maybe a little more than that. But so much of working on it right now feels like it maps to an older version of what I was interested in at the time. So even when the game comes out, like, I know we talked about like Tactics Ogre recently on the podcast, which is this older like tactics RPG game. And like Cantata is going to come out and someone's going to be really interested about like how I think that it compares to other tactics games in the space. And it's just like, I don't fucking care anymore. Like I cared about that 7 years ago, which is why I had the idea. And I like what it's going to be now, but like in some ways I feel ready to be done with this thing. And what seems nice about In Other Waters is that maybe because the cycle was short or 2 years is still a long ass time to make anything, but like because the cycle was short, you're able to still hold it in this like affectionate position where, like you're saying, it sort of provoked dialogues in yourself about themes that you might not have been able to happen on. And like to have something that you've delivered like that, that still feels alive in a certain way, sounds like it's sort of a, I don't know if it's like better or worse, because I could see ways that it's also could be like weird, but how do you hold In Other Waters? Yeah. Inside like your gestalt of the self of Gareth that exists now, or do you sort of see it as being like kind of done in an older version of yourself?
Yeah, that's a weird one. I think that like on release, I was very much in that mode of like, yeah, I'm done. Like I can't watch this. I can't like struggle to play it. Need other people to test this game because I'm just so close to it. And I can't see if it's good or bad or interesting or boring or too weird or not weird enough. But I think that I, like, in the, it was also obviously like a crazy time, right? Like I launched, I was also like working really hard on the game, and I'd spent like 2 years in like this home office where I am now. And I like launched, and then like coronavirus dropped, and then I was like, you know, I'm going to go out into the world finally. And then I was like, no, I cannot go out into the world. Everyone, welcome to the solo developer lifestyle. You live on Twitter. And so, yeah, so that was like also a brutal time, really. And for various reasons, I also like ran straight into the problem that like when you launch a game, you realize when you've been paying yourself out of that game's budget, you don't have any money anymore because you finished the game. and the money from the game is not like the money you're going to make from sales. If you get it, it's not going to come back for a while. So all of a sudden you're just like, oh, I have to make another game immediately. And so it was a crazy time around launch. And like, I think like over in the late summer, I watched almost the whole of, in one day, like the whole of a YouTube Let's Play. My favorite Let's Play of In Other Waters by Lalia Dyer. And like their Let's Play is just so, I know, warm, and like they read everything in this incredible voice. And I was watching that and I was like, oh, I really like this game. Like, but in a way that felt like the first time that I'd really experienced the game like that. Like it was long enough. This must have been like, yeah, maybe August or September. And it felt like it was long enough for me to start kind of reassembling the game in my brain as something outside of myself. But yeah, it does represent so much, like so much of what I was interested in. But also it misses so many other things. Like it's a weirdly non-architectural game, which is something that I've kind of always been aware of. But it's like it always felt weird to me that the first game that I would make would like not have, I mean, spoilers, there's buildings, but mostly not buildings in it. And yeah, like things like that. So, but then there's loads of stuff in it, like that goes back to me being a kid and like marine biology. But the other big thing was like, I made this game because I love like endless ocean. I love like diving games, and I love the Scanvisor in Metro Prime. And so a lot of this like was also coming out of like my real first loves of gaming as well, which do feel like they're in the past, right? Like I don't necessarily want to make games that are just about those like very, like some of them are really naive things, you know? So there's some things in Other Waters that are quite naive in a way. And so, yeah, it's a whole mix of things in terms of how it relates to me as a person. But it's definitely a, like it became, I thought it was personal in the sense that it reflected my obsessions. And then I think that I understood later that it was personal in the way that it reflected my emotions, which I wouldn't describe myself as like a very emotional designer. I probably have like the horrible traits of being a British person and just being raised to suppress emotion at all costs, which you might have heard of or seen if you've ever met a British person. And so, yeah, I think like that's been also part of figuring out like where it fits.
So I've been playing this game called Valheim recently. It's kind of like the new hotness game. Everyone's playing it, but it fits into a few trends that we've been seeing for the past few years of games, where it's like the Steam top seller that just comes out of kind of nowhere and everyone is all of a sudden playing it. And then it's also this like early access thing of so much of the game feels like so half-baked design-wise, but everything that you need and want is there mechanically, which I understand is like a different way of designing a game. But I'm talking about like visually the way that the game is designed, like the UX is kind of just trash. It all feels super half-baked. Like there's so many functions and stuff that you want that are not there. So many things that could be just made to look and feel a lot better. That being said, In Other Waters kind of is almost the opposite of this to me, where it feels like with your background in graphic design, it is one of the first things that draws you to the game is just the way that it's designed and the way that like the menus work and the way that everything kind of snaps together. Can you talk to us a bit about like design and your background in that discipline and how that kind of translates into In Other Waters and how maybe that makes it like appealing in a different way than other games might?
Yeah, it feels like cheating, especially when you're one person, because I think if you have like, I don't know. I swear to myself, surely there are other people in games who do graphic design, right? Like, there's games like Destiny, which have a gorgeous graphic design, but actually they're quite rare, like really good, really strong UI is quite rare. But I'm not a UI designer, right? So I think there's probably loads of basic UI mistakes in other orders. But I think that my understanding of, like, I don't know, of just being like, there's a couple of games I was inspired by, like Shrouded Isle, which has this amazing two-color palette, which is like this Kit Fox game. It's like green and black. It's like a...
Oh, yeah, the first-person, like, island adventure thing.
It's like it's just like a strategy. It's like a board game. It's like a Lovecraftian board game type thing called Shrouded Isle. Kit Fox did it. It has this really, like, acid green and black art style.
Yeah.
And it's just so, like, you instantly recognize it. And I remember seeing that at the time and, like, doing some sketches myself of, like, things that use that kind of two color art style, and I was just immediately, when I was making In Other Waters, I don't know, it was just my first instinct was to just be like, I'm just me, but, like, the thing that I can do is I know that from years of design work that I have a good eye for design and I could trust my eye, right? Like, because I'm so totally self-taught as a designer. I also don't have a degree in graphic design, right? Like, I have a degree in puppetry. Let's be clear. I have a PhD in experimental literature and a degree in puppetry. So that's what In Other Waters gets you. I think that kind of thing of having learned Photoshop when I was 15 on my computer at home,
oh, yeah,
and just, like, learning by eye how to do graphic design, but then doing it for, like, another, you know, 15 years after then, from when I was 15, to, you know, like, taught me that I can trust myself visually. And so I would just, like, start assembling things in Photoshop when I was making In Other Waters and just, like, just keep tweaking them and adding tiny bits, and but all the time trying to keep everything, like, super tight, keep the shape language, like, really tight. Like, there's only certain kinds of shapes, like, in Other Waters, right? Like, there's no, like, rounded corners, but there's, like, circles. There's these very 90s, like, things where you have, like, a line and then, like, an angle and another line. It's like the bottom of, like, a tape Walkman or, like, a CD Walkman. So, like, I build, like, Pinterest boards that have, like, 1,000 pins in them of just, like, old Japanese radios and shit. And then whenever I am designing stuff, I go to that and I steal, like, one visual motif. And, yeah, it's like this vast process of, like, there's, like, this quote from Francis Bacon that's, like, he calls himself, like, a pulverizing machine. And what he meant that was, like, when he was painting, he was just, like, taking stuff and smashing it together and then, like, putting it out, which sounds stupid because obviously In Other Waters does not look like a Francis Bacon painting or, like, in any way associate with Francis Bacon. But it's like that idea of being a filter, which I think comes from also being a critic. And so, yeah, like, that design process for me was, like, super iterative, super done just by eye, just by instinct, just by, like, let's put it on the screen, let's, like, adjust, like, and even down, because I wanted the UI to not feel like a grid, that even came down to, like, later on in development where I, like, added some features, you could kind of see if you look at the UI that, like, there's panels that just kind of, like, have got glued on, like, to the existing UI, and I've just shifted all the UI over. But that felt really natural to the atmosphere of the game of having this, like, really worn kind of anime style interface, the kind of interface you'd see in Evangelion rather than the kind of interface that you see in, like, Prometheus, or where you have just all these insane blue line holograms that, to me, like, mean nothing. Like, they don't have any, it's just tech, right? It's just like a big sign that says tech, but it doesn't. And, like, we've seen that though, like, in graphic design, right? Like, all the Star Wars sequels, they had, like, Territory doing the graphic design.
It's all Territory stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, like, really retro, right? Like, they went back to the old, like, crosshairs and, like, bomber sights and stuff like this. So I think, like, this move back towards understandable graphics in cinema and is also something that's, like, influencing me. So, yeah, I just, like I said, pulverizing machine, right? Like, that's the big advantage of having been a critic and going to make games is that you have, like, a huge wealth of material to draw from. And so you're actually all the time, you're just having a problem and then you go and play, like, you dig out your PS3 and you load up like a game that you seem to remember had like a cool solution to something. And then you play it. And even if you don't steal that solution, it just like gets your mind working through it.
I identify with that so much because when I was redesigning the Cantata UI, like the start of last year, basically what I did was I went and played like 15 minutes of like 40 strategy games that were in this, roughly the same genre, and took like copious screenshots and like threw them into Figma, and then literally just built out a UI that was my target, that was like this weird like giga UI that was like mini crops of little things. It was like, oh, I want these icons from Civ, plus like this portrait style from Total War, plus this sort of outliner from a Paradox game, and just like put it on there. And then literally in this pulverizing process sort of took that and then distilled it into its own sort of design language for the game. And it's just like, I think that, I don't know if that comes from also like having been a little bit of a critic, but this sort of notion of designing by recognizing the fact that people have done other good work in the space and being like, oh, someone has thought of this before. And like a lot of other people have thought about it, and some ideas are bad and some ideas are good, but like having this sort of context about knowing what worked and why it worked. Like I think Josh and I were talking last episode about, I don't know if we had like a name for it, but it was a sort of like this trend that we were maybe circling of like more modern early access games that just feel like it feels like pulverizing without any of the finesse, where they're just taking stuff and throwing it together, where it's like, we got to splay the spire roguelike mechanic, yeah, plus like
Mad Libs.
Yeah. It's like Mad Libs game design, yeah, which is like fine. And some of that stuff works, but instead of just like looking at different ways of doing maps or like traversal trees, they just like take Slay the Spires. And I think what's cool about In Other Waters is that it smells like a lot of these references, but it's not like you can point to any one thing and be like, oh, well, he's just doing that. You know, it's like, oh, Gareth, they chose to do like something different that moves in a different direction that is like funneled and informed by these things. And thinking about what you're doing with Heterotopia is, it feels very sort of adjacent, where you're working, there's an implicit body of knowledge to Heterotopias that is like the field of architecture critique, but then you're sort of pushing it in a little bit further direction to say, let's like steer it a little bit towards this thing. So that just seeing some parallels there behind this idea of, I don't even want to call it like doing it in the service of novelty. Like, how would you describe, like, I guess, why pulverize, right? Why do this thing instead of just copying someone else? Like, there's been a lot of desktop UI games, there's been a lot of UI games, but In Other Waters isn't like those, but it could have been, right? It could have been this territory style, crazy UI UX experience or something, but instead you sort of went for a different vibe. Like, what was the thought there? Like, I don't know, is there another version that looks more territory style? Or
I mean, there's like a million versions. There's like an infinite number of exports from Photoshop called final UI. I think it's more that it's like me. To me, the most important thing is that like it all passes through me. Like that's hence the Francis Bacon idea, right? Like the point was that like he's pulverizing, not just the process of, not like a pulverizing machine, or like just a, right? That like it passes through you and then it changes. That's when it, and I think that's like my, I think one of the things I've noticed is like I have a lot of weirdness to my process as a game developer that makes me not feel like a game developer. Like I don't feel like part of the games industry, quote unquote. I don't know what it feels like to be part of it, but I don't feel like that. But because I did a lot of weird stuff and I worked in like the video and graphic design stuff I did, with a lot of it was for theater. And I've worked a lot in kind of performance and also, like I said, kind of experimental literature and stuff like this. Like, but I also, like, I've run so many creative projects because I probably came to doing my debut game a lot later than, like, when I was 30, right, is when I started my debut game. Like, when I meet game devs, they often start, like, straight out of uni, straight off the back of a game design course. And so they probably haven't maybe brought many projects, certainly not many commercial projects, to like, completion. And so I think that combination of like having a weird background and, but knowing how to run a project and knowing like to trust myself in a way to like run the project meant that I could just kind of trust myself. Like I could just, I feel able to kind of just pull these influences and just not worry about it because I know that it's all going through my own weird brain. And a lot of the joy for me of working as a solo dev is like, if I want to put something down for a while, I can do that. Like no one's saying that I have to write this chapter for this week because that's the deadline. Like I can shift the deadlines. I can move things around. I can pull in new influences. I can go away and read some stuff if I feel I'm not in the right place for what I do. And while that's a lot of self-management and it can be very like intensely internal as an experience, it's still like, yeah, it's amazing to have that freedom really. And to have that trust to just kind of go, okay, I'll get there eventually. Like I just keep feeding myself that like something will come out and like that will work.
I also, I'm wondering now, like if this pulverizing process, like, you know, Francis Bacon, well-funded artist, so to speak.
I didn't expect this podcast to be about Francis Bacon, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I'm just like, but like you worked in like professional circumstances where you're pitching, you're like bidding on projects for like you want your firm or whoever you're working with, your client, to get picked up for the project that they're pitching on. So you're producing material for like lookbooks, mood boards, whatever. And like I did it too, right? I worked in video. I've worked a lot of other like things related to this. And I'm wondering if it's like there, you've got instilled in you what I almost want to call like hedging or like risk mitigation, because the worst thing to tell a potential client is like, we're doing something totally new. Maybe they like the sound of that, but they don't like paying for that. So a lot of the process of like bidding and like actually working on creative projects with other people, especially external entities who are providing you the resources to make those things happen, is to sort of sell them on a vision of something. And that is often not like, here's something totally new. It's like, oh, well, it's these things plus a little bit of this and a little bit of this. And like, so there's just some part of you that just knows how to do that now. So when you look at a game, you're just doing the same thing now. You're like, oh, well, I'm sort of pitching myself the game by, you know, accumulating, like there's no reason you have to do this, right? Like you just said, right? You're beholden to basically no one but yourself. And yet in this moment, you're still doing the same sort of resource gathering process, because I think you've worked on enough stuff to know that like just having like a mechanics idea isn't enough, that you're almost trying to sell yourself on the whole vision of the thing that you're making, even though obviously you're sold on it because it's your idea. I don't know. It's not really a question. It's just an observation of like that specific impulse, because I think it's rare too. Like I think a lot of, especially early game developers who are making their first game, like could fucking care less about like gathering resources about stuff. They're like, oh, it's going to be like these three video games. And then they do that. But like everything else that you're describing isn't part of the process, because they're not thinking about whatever that is that makes this sort of impulse happen.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're probably right that there's some habitual thing that just got drilled into me over years of like working in studios and just being told to, because I did a lot of pre-visualization work as well. And just like,
yeah.
So like used to just producing material for clients that like to try and then make that useful for the process. But also like the reason I quit doing that stuff is because I was like, I was working on some projects, like one of the last projects I was working on was like projection mapping on the like main palace in Dubai of like the Emirates, right? And I was just like, what am I, like, why am I using this skill set for like something that I hate and for something that like, you know, would not like, you know, you can't be queer in the UAE. I mean, you can if you're a foreigner, but like this, you know, like what am I doing? Like I wouldn't even, like I'm just doing this because like I work for a studio that's doing this. And I was just like, I'm done taking this freelance work. I want to use this skill set for my own work. And that was like the instigation for like, yeah, I'm going to take a shot, right? Like, and that's why I did a Kickstarter and was very lucky to get it funded. I'm very lucky to also have a publisher like come and save me from the Kickstarter, because like Because trying to make In Other Waters for the money that it raised on the Kickstarter is like would have been a it would have taken twice as long basically because I would have also been working another job.
Yeah.
So you get that stuff habitually beaten into you, but yeah, I think like for me it's so important that I'm there, that like this work is like my work. But there's always a tension in me for sure, because like you know, if I had complete freedom, like I did a PhD in like experimental literature, I would like make the weirdest shit possible, right? Like I get jealous of like Julian Palacios Promessa, because I'm like, I don't feel able to make Promessa in the sense of like, I don't know if I could get myself to making something that's like that like sits outside of so many things that we call games, but also like is, as you guys said in a previous podcast, like is so implicitly at the center of what a game is, and like of what presence in a game is, and what, like, especially like talking about heterotopias, I mean, like Promessa is like the A grade heterotopias material, right? It's like, it gets like the seal of approval.
That's the thing about, I think.
And I wrote this piece on Promessa.
no pitching on the pod.
Games are just such a restrictive medium. At least the paradigm around video game design is so restrictive because everyone thinks of games in terms of their mechanics, to the point where like so many of the most popular games, as long as you have a core mechanic that works and feels good, nothing else really matters. And that's just this whole idea where like game design at its core is like the god. It is like the center of everything. Where I feel like that's just not necessarily the best way for us to approach like interactive art. And I like that you're able to take this kind of like discipline agnostic approach, I would call it, almost like, even though you do respect game design, you do obviously have a lot of other games as influences. And you know, just as you take architecture as in, you know, you understand the basic principles of architecture and you've read up on it and you understand the discipline and you appreciate it and you respect it. I think that it's good to be able to kind of like look at this medium from outside of that and say like, oh, what do I do well? Like, what can I bring to this thing? And then create a game around that. And that is the stuff that I think is the most interesting and a really nice lens through which I think if more people who are making games saw video games through this lens, like we can have a lot more variety in what we tend to see out there. And I don't want to sound too disparaging of like a Valheim, for instance, because I think that game is awesome, even though it is just like a twist on Minecraft and whatever. And it's doing like something different with those things. But I think as far as like getting variety in where video games are and where they can go, I think that's like a crucial step, is kind of taking this approach that does not hold the mechanic above all else necessarily. And just having more instances where we can have that would be good for the medium, I think.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. And I think in a way, like some of the stuff within Other Waters also comes from a bit of naivety of like having not had to go through a AAA process. Like the closest I've come to working in a AAA studio is when I was a tester for Sega in 2010, right? Like, which is the worst job I had in my life. It was like a kind of hell. It's a 0-hour contract, which is a thing we have in the UK, which basically means you have a contract which guarantees you no hours of work per week. And then they just phone you up and tell you. So it means basically you get just as much work as they want to give you, but then they can also like not give you any work for 6 months while still keeping you on contract. It's really magical. But that was brutal. But yeah, like that's the kind of thing that made me be like, I never want to work in like a game studio in the AAA sense. And obviously there are good studios out there, but like, yeah, that was just a horrible experience. And I think that I had some kind of naivety because when I started working on Other Waters, one of the things, for example, that I was like, okay, so I want to do this, I want to do this game where it really annoys me in Subnautica that like all the creatures already have names, and that like when you jump into the sea in Subnautica, it's like just a coral reef. But like we just got to this alien planet and it's like a coral reef with like brain coral, which is like a thing that exists on Earth. And it's, like this is the most disappointing thing ever. Like we have just gone to this like crash land on an alien planet and you're telling me it's like the Great Barrier Reef, but like everything's a little bit different. But like as you start to make games, you realize like you're like, man, it would be so much easier if like everything already
just
had names.
Brain coral.
Because it was a real like pain and like hard to figure out, like in other words, how you have like dots that don't have names. They just have kind of descriptive names. And then like, how do you discover their names? And then I was like, okay, Ellery has to name them. But then I have to come up with this whole thing because I've never like seen that in a game, like where you have a character who like names creatures after a certain amount of time of looking at them. And it's like, you have to start figuring this stuff out from scratch. And like, yeah, it's dangerous. And like, if I had if I was the director of In Other Waters and it was a AAA game and I had 200 people like outside my glass office waiting for me to brief them, I would be terrified to be like, no, none of the creatures are allowed names until they've been scanned a certain number of times. Like people would be like, what are you talking about? And it's the same thing when I was like, okay, I'm going to have like a Metroid type structure because like I can lean on that because that's not really the focus of the game. So I don't mind using something kind of fairly well known there. But then I realized like the game has no doors. I was like, man, making a Metroid game without doors is a nightmare. Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I guess I'll just have like mushroom doors. And then I'm like, no, that doesn't work. That's just doors. So like, so, you know, all this stuff that as a critic, you're always pointing at and you're like, oh yeah, that's like those idiots, yeah, their color-coded doors. Like that doesn't look like an alien planet. And who wrote all those scan entries anyway? Like, this is lame. You know, when you're a game designer, you're like, I need this shit. Like, this keeps me alive. So yeah, like I think that designing In the Waters was also like making a game as somebody coming from outside of making games, but not coming from outside of making creative projects or like not coming from outside of the arts. And I think that's actually like a thing that I would love to see more of is like games. And it's because tools, like I couldn't have made In the Waters any sooner than I did, right? Because I don't code. So I used entirely like visual scripting, and like visual scripting tools are only just really kind of reaching their point where you could build an entire game out of them. And so, yeah, like I think getting people from outside games would be great, like getting loads of people who are artists or whatever and like getting them comfortable in game engines. They're gonna inherently make new stuff.
I'm so much more pessimistic than you about this. After having worked in VR for like 4 or 5 years, like I think what's special about you, if you let me flatter you for a second, is that
you are both an outsider.
Yeah, I know. It's only been an hour of flattering Gareth. Is that you're both an outsider to the space, but also have a deep knowledge of it. And I think like a lot of times when like artists, so capital A artists that are non-games people will come to games, they make very derivative shit. I think it's often the case that like just because they are the most proficient visual illustrator, whatever, in another sphere, does not make them like a good games creator. I've said this before, I think on Bad End, or at least in the Discord, but this notion of things that are maybe like they're like aesthetically progressive, but actually mechanically regressive. Where people often you put other people who you associate with something that is games like at a game and they'll make something that's really pretty, but like that when they're interacting with the stuff of a game, it's often like very rote and it's like, oh, it's my beautiful art and it's like a platformer or something. And I think that what's interesting about you and what you did with In Other Waters is that it's both like aesthetically interesting in terms of working, like you were saying, with different sorts of references in terms of how you're dealing with a UI system, especially something that fronts it so much as the experience, but also that what you're playing itself is something that is experimental. And I don't think that some rando who comes to play games, like I don't think if Territory, to use talk about them, like made a video game that it would be In Other Waters, right? They might make like a first person fighter pilot thing that like leans into their aesthetic sensibilities or whatever. So it's like there has to be some informing there of like the things that you can do or like that they have something that they know that is something that they can pull on. Because like I even look at something like Promessa or I was playing Lorne's Lure last night, and it's like those things I feel like an artist could come up with those, and I think that those people are somewhat like outsiders in a similar way to you as like the main sort of space of games, but what they're doing is clearly in dialogue with games. And often when I see like artists like do art games for, you know, I guess there's a term, like their stuff is, it feels like uninformed, or it's like very specific in the, it's like in the sphere of gallery to be played. Whereas In Other Waters, like Josh was saying, appears in the fucking Switch RSS feed. And it's like Gareth Damian Martin, creator of In Other Waters, talks to you about weird aliens. And you're like, yeah, there you go. There they go. Just like doing their thing. And you don't get that with just artists. So, I mean, obviously there's something that can be remedied. There's a thing that can happen, but it'd be the same way, you know, it's happened before where you look at people who are good at making cinematic-esque video games and you say, hey, go make a movie. And they make like, I don't know, like the first person Doom movie. And you're like, I don't know. I think it feels idealistic to just say that more people like you should come to do what you did, because I think it discounts the fact that you are a sort of rare intersection of these specific things in both your interests, but also that you're not so deep in it that you're only making this sort of thing. And excavating more people like you feels like what the future is. It's not just like, let's bring in other artists to do their artist thing. Because then you get stuff that's like, I don't know, not great.
Yeah. But I know what you mean.
It's my diatribe.
Like a kind of respect for the medium, or like a knowledge of the medium, no matter like what you're doing.
Or like enough to,
right,
like disrespect it. Like to be able to knowingly know how to like fuck a video game's form is a special skill that would be like really great. Like to be able to actually make a subversive video game, you have to sort of understand what video games are doing. But instead, it's like this sort of serious games movement. It's like you put a lot of people who are like big thinkers at like making a video game, and they make like a clone of Mario where when you click a question mark block, like oil comes out or something. And you're like, yeah, I guess that's a thing, but like you're not working with the stuff.
Yeah, I think it's hard, that side of it. But I think that's because games are also like really insular as a medium. Like, like what I find is like
more people, so than art.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like way like they're both more popular and more insular, right? Like I don't know what I don't know anything about fine art like these days anyway, and I don't really have like a relationship to it. But like I have a relationship to performance and theater, and like there's like a division between those two things, right? Like, which is not obvious to maybe people outside, but like there's like performance art and there's like theater, and those things are like wildly different. And I think like games is a word which is used to describe both performance art and theater in its own medium. And so I think we have like so much stuff happening within games that I always just get annoyed when I'm trying to talk to people who don't know games, which is like a lot of people I know. I'm not surrounded by people who like know loads of stuff about games. Those people are on the internet for me. And so it's always hard because people come to me and they talk about like AAA games, and I always try to tell people like that's not games, like that's a part of games, but there's no language for that, and there's the precedent is tricky, and so it's complicated. But like I don't know, I'm a particular assemblage of like influences and things that I don't think is any more despite you are very flattering, but like I it doesn't make me any more viable or like some kind of ideal version, because like I have a lot of hangovers from growing up with games and like stuff like Metroid Prime, and like I'm going to make like I said I'm going to steal stuff from AAA games and try and make interesting, like experimental is definitely the right word for what I want to do, right? Like it's explicitly experimental. That's how I work. I like make something, try it out, mess around with it, try to like follow the theme rather than like the engagement through a mechanic or whatever. Like I'm a very much a thematic designer. I had a post-it note with Symbiosis written on it, stuck to the top of my monitor for the entire time I made In the Wars. And like that entire game was just like, whenever I had a question, like the post-it note would answer it with the word Symbiosis. Like that's what that game's about. For me, it's about Symbiosis. Like in every way I could think that word could mean something. But like obviously loads of designers don't work like that. And yeah, like I don't know, like I also love Mass Effect, right? And I mean not that Mass Effect is perfect. I think that's the other thing, right? Like there's lots of people like me who are like you guys, right? Like you're the same as me, because you're the same kind of people who are like, you like games, but probably you talk a lot of shit about how bad they are. And like,
we were talking, it's like a few episodes ago, and it was me and Josh were talking about how it's hard to talk to like normies about games because you're like, I don't want to talk about Assassin's Creed. That's not like, that's not what I'm interested in. And you don't want to tell people that you're interested in games because they associate all this stuff with you. And you're like, like, I'm just imagining the sort of 15-second Gareth has to intro themselves about what they like in games to a random person.
Yeah, you're like, no, it doesn't happen.
And then you're like, I like games, and they're like Assassin's Creed, and you're like, no, like Promessa, and they're like, what's that? And you're like, well, I also run this architecture and games, and then they just like walk away.
Okay, but Kyle, we also cannot forget that the tools that allowed Gareth to make In Other Waters have not been necessarily around forever, right? Like, the fact that like they're able to make a game like this is due to like relatively recent developments, and it's the kind of thing where it's like, I think of sports, like,
I don't know that, because like, you, if you actually look at the lineage of indie games, like a lot of interesting stuff has been happening through like Flash and like ActionScript and a lot of things before like proper big game engines. I think that it's not,
but
like, I don't think
it's any coincidence that like this new generation of video game auteurs has come around, like that are working with like Source and that are working with Game Maker and that are working with Twine and that, you know, that have these roots in like all these relatively new tools. And I think just like as more of these come out, you'll see more and more of that. Like, you'll see more Robert Yangs, you'll see more. You might see more Jonathan Blows, but you know, you might see more Jason Roars, no, but you'll see some, you know, you'll see some more Gareths too, you know?
You'll see some
but,
more.
But John Blow is totally like tools, like he's the opposite, right? Like he's a hardcore programmer.
Yeah.
He's like a computer science madman.
Even if I was to say like Robert Yang was obviously working with a lot of those older tools as well. So probably not the best examples, but you know, the principle still applies.
No, I think it's true because like I got my start in Twine, right? And I've done a lot of interactive theater projects using Twine, and I introduced Twine to interactive theater company, like to a company I worked with. And now it's like the main thing they use to it's used as like a script, right? Like they will like write the script for an interactive show in Twine and like run it off an iPad, run the whole show off an iPad. Like it's those tools are there and like they have incredible resonance. And like Twine was incredible and continues to be, just like Bitsy is, for like getting stuff out of people who felt they could never make a game. And that's I felt like that. Like I loved games like most of my life, right? Like I played games when I was little. They fascinated me. I love this thing of like I do with Heterotopias, which is like things that I know are problematic and I know they're like big and broken and massive industrial productions, but I love like mining them for like the things that obsess me or interest me that are in them. But like, I never was like, oh yeah, I'm going to make games. I never had this ambition in my brain because like when I was a teenager, I tried to make stuff in Source and I was like, no, I can't do this. Like it took me like 4 days to make a headcrab like come out of a car, like, and jump at the player. That was it. Like, I was just trying to remake that bit in the tunnel from the like where you drive the car and then like the tunnel's all blocked up in the dark with broken up cars. Mm-hmm. And like I just started trying to make that, but like, yeah, I just I couldn't. There was no way. I had like my computer was too crap. Like I just couldn't even run it. Like I used to edit films on Windows Movie Maker, right? So like tools are important because like if I think now like what I would have access to when I was a 16-year-old, like it'd be totally different for me. You know, I couldn't even film, I used to make loads of film stuff, but like, I couldn't even film video. The first game I made was on the Game Boy cameras, like in retrospect was on the Game Boy cameras, like little picture, clicker picture function, right? You could add these little buttons to pictures and it's like HyperCards. You like click on the picture and it takes you to another picture. And so you could kind of create like a choose your own adventure by taking a load of pictures and then putting buttons on them, like choose this option or choose this option. So like I was 11-year-old, like I took a lot of pictures of Bionicles and like made a choose your own adventure Bionicle game with a Game Boy camera. And that was amazing to me because that was a tool that like I could use and I could make something, but like I couldn't distribute it, right? I couldn't upload it to itch. Right. I couldn't like do it. Like it was just something that like I could give my Game Boy camera to my friend and say, play this 10-second game I made where you get to choose which Bionicle to fight. But like, yeah, like it's so tools are massive for sure. I think it will, this stuff will have an effect. But it, yeah, I think for stuff to have resonance, it does also need to come from people who have a relationship with the medium, because in some form, you know, like that doesn't mean like hardcore gamers. It just means people who like have an interest in games.
Are you telling me? I think. Sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
That video games, for video games, there's no such thing as outsider art.
I mean, there's no such thing as art, is there? So it's, that solves that problem.
Yeah.
but no, I mean, it's a good question, but I think no. I would almost think like, that, no, I guess that is, because I guess that's what Twine was about. Like for me, like when I think of like Porpentine's very early stuff, like that does kind of feel outsider. I don't think outsider is a, yeah, good question. I don't know. it's complicated, right? Like it depends on how you define outsider, but it's, yeah.
I'm thinking of I think that's more likely. Like people who are just grab a guitar and just like quote sing and do stuff
harsh
coming
noise
from the heart, but so, and you could feel it.
So I've done a lot of like Twine workshop stuff with like theater people. Because it's something that theater company ended up asking me to do, is like teach Twine to other people that work with them. And some of those people would do things like make a Twine for like their partner's birthday. And I think like that to me is the definition of outsider art. Like if that's an outsider art game, because it was just like some thing that you made for somebody, like no audience, just kind of like making a thing that's, or an audience, but like a tiny audience. It's like a performance for one. And yeah, like to me, that kind of is what I think of when I think of like outsider art. I think it's just that games are like hyper commercial, right? And like In Other Waters is a commercial project, to be clear. Like, you know, it funds a studio. So like, it's not like I am operating in this like hyper artistic platform, especially as somebody who has like done work in experimental literature and things that don't make money like at all. Like there is no money, because there's no money at all. Like there's no money coming in, there's no money coming out, right? It's just people doing stuff because that's what they're obsessed with, or that's what they feel relates to them. So to me, like games always feel kind of quite far from that. But the one thing that I will say for games is that I found personally, a lot of the mediums I worked in my life, like I found it really hard to get a foothold, because people were actually like, they knew what they wanted and they didn't want anything different. And so even in like places that you would think would be super quote unquote progressive, like experimental literature, people are like, no, I know what I like. And I like what I like. And like in theater or performance, I like this kind of theater or this kind of performance. And that's all I want. I'm not like going out there looking for like what's going to be the new thing. Well, I think that because games are built out of this sense of novelty, and this, which used to be about like the best graphics or whatever, there is a really strong implicit idea that if you like games, you will be interested in something new. And I think that people like me have been able to take advantage of that instinct for novelty to make experimental work and then find a big audience for it, you know, an audience that you wouldn't typically find for it, for quote unquote experimental work, right? Like in any other medium, if you want to write an experimental novel, your experimental novel is not going to be like awarded the Booker Prize only if you were already very established, or if, you know, this rare happens, but it's like, it's experimental within the very fixed form of the novel. That they're not like very experimental work, but like something like In Other Waters can actually like sit on the kind of commercial video game criticism websites in the like, you know, top 50 indie games of the year or whatever. It can sit there, which is like, to me, that's really exciting. And like, I would never expect an experimental novel I wrote to be in the top 50 novels of the year from The Guardian, you know, like no way. I mean, maybe, but no way to me, my brain. So I think like that thing in games that people are like, they always wanted new stuff, and now the new stuff isn't very interesting anymore. It's like a good opportunity for people making actually new things to get an audience, and for people to be like, yeah, that looks new, I'll try it. Like, sure, people are talking about it.
I also think too that I've found like in trying to introduce people who don't play games to games, that stuff that we would describe maybe as experimental often hits much harder with these people in a way where especially stuff that doesn't reek of what we traditionally associate with AAA video games. It's just like, it doesn't rely on that same sort of especially like mechanical acumen. Like that's a huge barrier that I think is easy to discount. But stuff like, I mean, something like Donut County is like very appealing to a lot of people who don't play games. Goose Game a little bit, In Other Waters. I've always tried to introduce people to a lot of what Brendan Chung would make as sort of ways to play interactive stuff to engage with the medium that doesn't require this sort of back knowledge. And it seems like it's always been surprising to me that experimental stuff, despite maybe being rejected by the internal community of whoever sits atop the throne of gamers, can often find so much more of a life and success outside of that sort of like hegemon where people, like the world is so big, right? And like, the amount of people who play games is actually a relatively small, well, play games consistently is a relatively small percentage of people. So even if like a AAA game like really hits, like, I don't know, GTA 5 has sold like, let's just even say like 50 million copies or something, right? Like that's still such a small percentage of the total amount of humans on Earth that like an experimental game that can still strike outside of that typical audience still has the potential to reach like, theoretically, every other person on Earth who didn't choose to buy Grand Theft Auto 5 because they don't like what it's doing. And I think that it's easy to get pigeonholed in this idea that, you know, games have to sit inside of this sort of box. But in fact, like there's other ways that people can engage with this stuff. And like you said, like people will play and put experimental or more experimental-ish games and let them sit alongside other game experiences because you've allowed them to believe that games can sort of be bigger than whatever this like single-minded mindset is. Also, like side note, I think that people are often too like tied to this notion of wanting to be called a game that I think is maybe detrimental, but that's like a whole different conversation.
It swings both ways though, I think, like that in a way, like it's a big umbrella, but it's an umbrella that allows me to, like as a solo creator, like to sit alongside like Hades in people's brains or whatever, you know, as like their game of the year, which is crazy and completely ridiculous.
But that's in the context of someone knowing Hades, right? Like if you go to someone else who doesn't know Hades and you're describing In Other Waters, I actually wonder if you would reach to the word game first, right? Like,
I mean, this is why this 15-minute introduction is like, because you have to be like, they start on us at best, the conversation starts with Assassin's Creed and you have to be like, no, I don't make Assassin's Creed, but I might make an experimental architecture zine about Assassin's Creed, but I'm not actually that interested in Assassin's Creed.
Cause but actually, if you don't what start I'm with making, game, right?
Yeah.
If you don't like, start with I'm, game, you start over here and you're like, you don't have to do that. You're like, oh, it's a sort of, it's an interactive map explorer. And they're like, oh, cool. But if you, as soon as you say game, you've got to like walk them off this cliff.
yeah. But you're also not going to, if you say other stuff. Yeah, I know what you mean. But it's, yeah, it goes both ways. At the end of the day, it's impossible to explain to somebody what In Other Waters is anyway, even if they play video games. So everyone on this who's listening to this podcast is just
that's
like,
I still
don't know what this game is about. I've listened to an hour and a half of this and I still don't even know. I don't know. The other thing, though, is like sustainability, right? And that's like this thing that connects In Other Waters to Heterotopias is for me is like when I did these things, my thought was like, I've got to make these sustainable. So like from the start, like Heterotopias paid writers. Okay, it didn't pay them a lot of money, but like it paid writers and it got sold. And that was like always going to be the model for me for Heterotopias because I was just like, I'm not going to do, I've been like paid by Killscreen. I did some air quotes there for everyone listening. I like know what it's like to live with that. Like I'm not doing that to other people for my project. So like, I've got to make this sustainable for everybody on some level. But that was the same for me with like In Other Waters saying like, okay, I'm going to make it like in this amount of time, I'm going to make it in 2 years. It's going to be like, it's going to have like this simple graphics. It's going to have this because I was looking at like what I could do and like what I could fit. Like working to the deadline, working to the brief, working to the scope, like, yes, doing something that was experimental, but like years in working in delivering projects had taught me that like you work to what fits in the gap that you have. And I think like that is what I see a lot of not happening in games is like so many people just like taking 7 years to make something that like it doesn't, yeah, like it doesn't fly. And it's, yeah, I think it's hard. Games are hard and they take a long amount of time. But like, I'm committed now to that. And that's why, you know, if Another Waters took twice as long, then it wouldn't be sustainable anymore, right? Like that's the simple fact of it. Like if it took me twice as long to make it, I wouldn't be able to make a second game because the same amount of sales wouldn't have made it. I realize now that I'm not trying to dunk Kyle here, but
I was like, ooh,
trying not to dunk your long development period.
No, but I'm definitely like,
I know it's a part-time development period, so
yeah. I wanted to ask you real quick a question. I don't know if we're about to wrap up, but in Other Waters, this is a very like development thing. How do you do the UI? Is it just like PNGs? Is it actually the Unity's UI system? Is it like SDF lines? Like how do you actually render the UI?
Please don't ask me game development questions because it's like a humiliating process because like my game is really
badly made. I just want to know
because
there's like a million different ways to do it. But
No, it's not actually raster, like straight out of Photoshop PNGs for most part. Some of it is, but like it's actually a mix, which is the worst answer. Is like, you know, like if you were to separate it, like it's lots of little bits. But no, mostly it's flat squares. It's mostly Unity's UI image.
So it is actually the UI system that you're using.
The thing that's fun is that I got a good story about the fact that like all of the topographic maps are vector files, which is like stuff made in Illustrator, which for people who don't know what that means, it's like the vector files are things that are not like they're not raster. You can scale them infinitely versus like an image. They're just like a load of numbers that like can display an image. But like I can put those in Unity and convert them to meshes, like 3D models essentially.
Yeah, so
but they're just horrible. Yeah. They like converts them to like the like. If you turn on like the wireframe view of them, you don't want to ever do that. And like that's the kind of background, or that's how I make games. It's like I think so many indie game developers make that. I know Sel Davidson, who's making No Longer Home, posted a thing on Twitter where he's like showing how he made a kind of wibbly, smoky background, and he just made like a giant circular, squiggly background, and he was just rotating it in Unity like a giant wheel, and the screen was just showing the bottom part of it. And like that's my kind of, as someone who comes from puppetry and like theater, that's my kind of solution. Like something where you can see the wires is the kind of solution I go for. Something that's like very non-code. It's just like, how would you make this if it was real life? It's like going back to being one of those guys who made the Universal logo before there was computer graphics, you know, and so they got like a chrome sphere and they like film projected the globe onto it, and then they like somebody shined it really hard and they sprayed it with something. That's my kind of thing. That's how I work.
That's a fine answer. I was just, after having played it, I was like, are these meshes or are they sprites or what? Yeah.
Yeah, but I would say that like I met like a lot of developers who like talked to me about like that topographic map and were like, oh, you could do it this way and like do it with a shader and do it with this. But like the nice thing is like the game came out and like that's what matters, right? Like it doesn't matter what's in there then. Once it's out, it's out. Like don't ever look under the hood again. Just send it out there. If people play it and they enjoy it, then that's it. That's mission accomplished.
I'm going to decompile your code and give you a code review.
What happens when the speedrunners start breaking down the game and they're like, oh, spaghetti code, fucking.
I would love.
RNG.
I've been dreaming about someone speedrunning in Other Waters because like it's so, because if you don't read, the game is like 3 seconds long, right? Like you just.
It's like the Gone Home speedrun.
If you just skip all of the reading parts, then you're just through the game so fast. But I think somebody could just like just tear through that paper screen and just reach the ending in 3 seconds. I'd love to see it.
So the thing, that's the first thing in AGDQ. So the thing about this game is terribly made. So the code's terrible. So I'm going to warp from the first second
right
to the
through
last
it so
second.
Quick.
Here's the credits. All right. That's yeah.
But like... speedrunning in Other Waters would be like the most painful experience ever because you're not reading the game. You're just like repeatedly doing this same methodical, like incredibly simplest, like simple structure of like going forward. If you're not reading, like you're, yeah, like good luck to you if you're willing to do that. throughout the game.
There's a lot of people willing to. One thing I've learned through speedruns is a lot of people willing to do stuff that you would never expect people to be willing to do.
Is there really? I'm like, I'm gonna Google this. There's got to be. We're off the rails here. In other waters, there's got to be one.
Oh, on like log,
there's a,
yeah.
There's a three minute review.
A 3 minute review.
In a way, is a speed run.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any.
No, there's not one. There's a Spiritfarer speed run, and there's not an In Other Waters speed
yet.
Run.
Yet,
yeah.
I haven't discovered it.
It's because you don't have a direct control of your avatar, which is like, yeah. That's like, that's also the, that's like another one of those things on that list of things where I was like, there's a reason people do this. There's a reason in games. When you press forward, the character goes forward. When you press back, the character goes back. And if you design a game that doesn't have that in it, you got to think up some other things.
Well, this has been an enlightening chat, Gareth. I mean, why don't we start
thanks for joining
wrapping
us.
Up here by talking, you know, anything you want to plug, where can people find you online, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Jump Over the Age, which is the name of my studio that is just me, but studio's got to have a name. You can find In Other Waters on jumpovertheage.com, or you can find it on Steam or Switch or Humble or GOG or any of those other. Is it GOG now? I had never said it out loud. And you can find Heterotopias on heterotopiaszine.com or on itch. You can search for Heterotopias, or if you want to wade through some results about Michel Foucault, you can just write Heterotopias into into Twitter, Google, and you can look at some philosophy and the zine at the same time. And as people have previously asked, no, it has nothing to do with heterosexuals. It's a completely separate thing. It's Heterotopia is not the heterosexual utopia, just to be incredibly clear, as people on Twitter have suggested previously. It is a theoretical term. Blame Michel Foucault.
All right.
And you're also accepting pitches for the new issue.
I am, yeah. Yep. Yeah, just go to heterotopiaszine.com and you can get the contact page, or you can just email pitches@heterotopiaszine.com or gareth@heterotopiaszine.com to get the direct line to me for your pitch on power and spaces and architecture. Not just power generally, power, spaces, architecture, games. Pitch me.
Awesome. Well, Gareth, thank you so much for joining us on the show. As again, welcome to the Superculture quote family. It does feel a little weird. The Superculture, welcome to Superculture Network, right?
Superculture Network
is now part of Superculture. Glad to announce that. Hope you all enjoyed listening. As always, we are Bad End Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. We hope that you will rate us and review us on iTunes. And stay tuned, because we've got more exciting things coming down the pipeline. But in the meantime, join us in our Discord. You can check out our Patreon to do that, patreon.com/badend. But in the meantime, we will see you in a couple of weeks. Later.
See you.